Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Congressman Duncan Hunter is asking the court to dismiss 60 federal corruption charges against him. Find out why on today's show. Meanwhile, federal prosecutors have released a new motion which accuses the married congressman of spending campaign funds on affairs with five different women, including three lobbyists, and we'll have details. La Mesa's City Council has signed a three-year deal for its popular Oktoberfest. Find out what's new coming up at a preview of this year's event on today's show. Grocery workers have voted to approve a strike against major supermarket chains locally, and we'll tell you why. And then we'll have a special report on rising rents across our region. Find out which communities have the biggest rent hikes and what you can expect to pay for a one-bedroom apartment in each community. On Crime Beat, hear about a violent assault in Lemon Grove. And then we'll have news on summer feeding sites to help stop child hunger across our region. Find out where you can go to get free food for children in need, including several locations in East County. Then hear about California's new gas tax hike that will make our rates the highest in the nation starting July 1st, and how your tax dollars will be spent. On Green Scene, we'll have a report on a proposal by wildlife experts who are calling for mountain lions to be declared endangered species under state law in San Diego County and some other California regions. Learn more about our local mountain lion population on today's show. In the second half of our show today, on Destination East County, we'll tell you where to find 4th of July festivities and fireworks, as well as other summertime festivals, concerts, movies in the park, and more. County libraries have a summer reading challenge, and we'll have details. Registrations are shifting across our region. Find out what that could mean for local elections coming up across East County. From Public News Service, hear about a decision by the Supreme Court to block a Trump administration effort to put a citizenship question on the ballot. Plus, hear why California ranks low in child well-being compared to most other states in the nation. We'll also have news about a brand new farmer's market opening this weekend in Campo. On Sounds of History, finally, we'll be re-airing our episode on World War II veterans, taking a sentimental journey aboard a warbird plane at Gillespie Field. So stay tuned for all of these events and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Congressman Duncan Hunter's attorney has petitioned the court to dismiss 60 criminal charges of stealing campaign funds and filing false campaign reports to hide the theft of donors' money spent on personal expenses such as family vacations, oral surgery bills, his children's school tuition, and affairs with multiple mistresses. The Republican congressman claims that federal prosecutors lacked impartiality, violating his Fifth Amendment right to due process. His argument is based on a single email regarding U.S. attorneys who attended a Hillary Clinton dinner in San Diego. The U.S. Attorney's Office has said the lawyers were there on official business, as is customary when high-level political figures are in town. Hunter's defense team argues that an email from the Secret Service arranging a photo opportunity with Clinton and prosecutors shows bias. Separately, Hunter's legal team has also sought to move his trial out of San Diego County. The trial is slated to begin in September. Hunter has previously sought to blame his wife Margaret, insisting he is innocent of all charges. Margaret Hunter earlier this month changed her plea to guilty on one count of conspiracy and implicated her husband as knowledgeable and involved in decisions to misuse campaign funds and cover up the crimes. In a new filing on Monday, prosecutors reveal evidence that Congressman Hunter spent money not only on family expenses for himself, his wife, and their three children, but also on intimate affairs with five different mistresses over 7 years, starting in 2009, shortly after he won election to Congress. According to prosecutors, Hunter began living with one of his mistresses, a lobbyist, at her Washington, D.C. home, at a time when he had told media that he was saving taxpayers' money by sleeping at his Capitol Hill office. The couple took a ski vacation to Heavenly Mountain Resort in Lake Tahoe, charged to his campaign, and later took a weekend double date to Virginia Beach with friends, as well as on a golf trip and to an out-of-town concert. He started romancing another woman at the Republican National Convention in Florida in 2012, and was soon sleeping at her home and cozying up with her at a speakeasy-style bar. She worked for the House Republican leadership, according to the prosecution. A third woman worked in Hunter's office, where they sometimes stayed overnight together. Mistress number four was a lobbyist who had organized fundraisers for Hunter. Prosecutors say he visited her home late at night for intimate personal activities, unrelated to his congressional duties or campaign. The fifth affair was also with a lobbyist, starting in 2016, whom he stayed overnight with at her home, according to prosecutors. Hunter reportedly used campaign funds for Uber rides to and from her home. Prosecutors state, Hunter's intimate relationships demonstrate his knowledge and intent to embezzle campaign funds. The prosecution says the affairs also provide a motive for embezzlement, since such activities did not come cheaply, and the Hunters were deep in debt. At the time, Hunter spent thousands of dollars treating his mistresses to meals, drinks, and vacations. Prosecutor's motion states that they gave Congressman Hunter an opportunity to stipulate that the alleged expenses on affairs are true, which would have spared him the embarrassment of having those details admitted into evidence in open court. But Hunter declined to sign that agreement. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This is Miriam Raftery with a local government report from La Mesa. La Mesa City Council has approved a 3-year permit for McFarlane Promotions to run the city's popular Oktoberfest in partnership with the La Mesa Village Association. McFarlane will provide a 50% cost recovery to the city up to a maximum of $50,000 a year. Council members Christine Alessio and Dr. Keila Weber voted no on the 3-year contract because they wanted a higher cost recovery rate. Now, in the past, the city did receive 100% cost recovery, but circumstances have changed. With new organizers facing challenges, the city dropped the rate to 50% several years ago with a goal of eventually raising it, but never did. The 3-year contract was sought to bring stability to the process after the event underwent several changes of organizers in recent years. At one time, the event stretched to both sides of Spring Street, but police concerns over security near the trolley station led to reducing the size of the event, which limited the number of booth spaces and revenues. A former merchants group ran into financial problems after the city shut down La Mesa Boulevard for a year for a street and landscaping improvement project. That group dissolved and failed to pay the city $40,000 owed for police security during the event. The city took over running Oktoberfest for a year, and an outside organizer stepped in. The event shrank to just one day instead of three at one point. Then a new group, the La Mesa Village Association, was formed and organized the event with McFarlane. Last year's event, under their leadership, was a success, drawing an estimated 50,000 people to the village, according to McFarlane, which invests revenues back into Oktoberfest and Holiday in the Village events. La Mesa's Oktoberfest has long been touted as the biggest Oktoberfest in the San Diego region. Dr. Weber, the newest council member, peppered staff, organizers, and colleagues with questions on the finances and history. She noted that the city budget is tight, and funds are also needed for parks, road repairs, and other projects. Mayor Mark Rapostathis explained that the lower cost recovery occurred because after the old merchants group couldn't pay its bills, the council stepped in out of concern that there wasn't going to be an Oktoberfest at all. Councilman Colin Parent said of Oktoberfest, "For the last 2 years, it's been great,
and he made the motion to approve the 3-year contract with 50% cost recovery, which passed with the support of Councilman Bill Baber and Mayor Arapostathis. This year's Oktoberfest will run from October 4th through 6th in La Mesa's downtown village with several changes. These include a new, all-German-themed beer garden with traditional German music and foods. Event goers can still find a broader variety of music and foods at another beer garden, plus food trucks. There will be 2 kids' fun zones this year with attractions such as a trampoline, inflatable jumps, and face painting. And the event will feature craft vendors as well as the return of another crowd favorite, the Wiener Dog Races.
Members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union have voted to authorize a potential strike against Ralph's, Albertsons, and Vaughn's grocery stores across Southern California, including San Diego County. On Facebook, UFCW Local 135 posted, "Together, we voted to reject the pitiful contract offer that corporate grocery executives left on the table. 96% of membership across Southern California UFCW locals said no to corporate greed and yes to fighting for what we're owed." The union announced the action Wednesday, but it's not yet certain whether a walkout will occur. The union plans meetings with picket captains aimed at economic protest actions, with the next bargaining sessions scheduled for July 10th, 11th, and 12th. Employees have been working without a contract since their last contract expired in March, which included annual pay raises for workers and other benefits. Union representatives indicate the grocery corporations have offered wage hikes of less than 1% for some workers, while seeking to cut cashiers' wages by 25%. Albertsons, which also owns Vaughn's, issued a statement indicating the strike vote doesn't change the process, adding, "We remain committed to negotiating a contract that is fair to all parties, including our employees, and will continue to work to achieve that." Ralph's issued a similar statement, which reads, "It is business as usual in Ralph's stores." The strike authorization vote means union negotiators have the power to call for a strike, if deemed necessary, but it does not automatically mean a walkout will occur. The last grocery strike, in 2003 to 2004, lasted 141 days and cost supermarkets an estimated $2 billion. Workers lost an estimated $300 million in income. A strike now could potentially have even broader boycotting by the public, since consumers now have many more options to shop for groceries at outlets such as Costco, Trader Joe's, Sprouts, Target, farmers markets, and Food for Less, to name just a few of the alternatives that have grown locally.
Rents are rising across our region, pricing more and more renters out of the market. The city of San Diego was ranked second worst in the nation for rent hikes on a one-bedroom apartment last year when rents rose 17%. The average one-bedroom apartment in San Diego now costs $2,300, according to Rent.com. That 17% is a lot more than the national average rent hike of 2.7% or the California statewide average rent increase of 4.5% on a one-bedroom apartment last year. Rents are also skyrocketing in East County, where some communities had double-digit rent hikes on one-bedroom apartments from March 2018 to March of this year. Lemon Grove rents rose 15.7%, La Mesa 10.6%, and El Cajon more than 5%. Santee, by contrast, had only a modest 1.3% increase. Spring Valley, the only unincorporated community in San Diego County with enough inventory to provide statistically valid data, had a 9.6% increase. Jennifer Dunaway, with Rent.com, cautions that the data does not include all rentals in these areas since it relies on information from multifamily rental properties listed on ApartmentGuide.com. Lemon Grove and Santee had less than 5 properties listed, so the data may not reflect the total rental market. Still, the upward trend is concerning. Population growth last year is one key factor fueling demand for rental housing in our region. The San Diego region's sunny weather, outdoor activities, and other attractions make it a perennially popular place to live, putting pressure on rental affordability. East County has long been one of the county's more affordable places to live, but as rentals spiral up, many are finding it hard to make ends meet, especially those on low or fixed incomes. Not surprisingly, homelessness remains high across our region. The 2019 point in time count found 8,102 homeless people countywide, with 13% of those in East County. While countywide, the total actually dipped 6% in the January homeless count over the prior year. Some East County communities saw increases, including substantial rises in homelessness in Lemon Grove, El Cajon, and Alpine. Some activists at recent El Cajon City Council meetings have called on the council to adopt rent controls, an action the council has resisted. The state of California has sought to mandate more affordable housing, but has drawn resistance from communities that oppose zoning changes for rental units to be built in areas zoned as single-family, or to make it easier to erect high-rise rental properties. Some local governments, such as La Mesa and county supervisors, have enacted ordinances to make it easier for single-family homeowners to build granny flats, which can be rented out or used to house family members. Many see infill development as a better option for creating affordable housing than erecting high-rises in small towns or massive housing developments in rural, wildfire-prone areas. But even granny flat ordinances have met with opposition in some neighborhoods over parking concerns. The county has increased funds to build low-income rental housing on county properties, with an aim of reducing homelessness and helping people at risk of becoming homeless avoid being out on the streets. High rents are also daunting for seniors and disabled people on fixed incomes, as well as for large families, including many immigrant families who came to East County during the Iraq War. There are no easy solutions to the housing affordability crisis, but increasingly, the state and local governments are recognizing that as rents continue to spiral out of sight, income growth is not keeping pace. Even two household incomes are often spending far more than experts advise on rent to keep a roof over the family's heads, which means less money is available for other necessities such as food, transportation, children's school supplies, and medical care. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Gerald Stevenson with a Crime Beat report. Two suspects have been charged with a violent assault of a man found bleeding in the street in Lemon Grove late Monday night, says Sergeant Sanchez with the San Diego Sheriff's Department. Deputies from Lemon Grove and Rancho San Diego responded to the scene along with Heartland Fire and paramedics. Deputies found the victim sprawled on the sidewalk on Pacific Avenue around 10:45 p.m. with a laceration to his head. Witnesses said four young men in a light blue vehicle chased the victim, then beat him on the body and head with a long stick and a metal pipe. An axe was found near the scene, but authorities later determined it was not used in the assault. The victim was treated and taken to Scripps Mercy Hospital. Deputies found a possible suspect vehicle on Daytona Street and contacted a group of males associated with the vehicle. 25-year-old Terrell Millard admitted to the assault and was booked into the San Diego County Jail. A second suspect, who's 15 years old, also admitted to the assault. He was charged at the Lemon Grove Sheriff's Station and released to his mother pending a hearing.
One in six children in San Diego County suffers from hunger. That's over 120,000 children. Many of them lose access to nutritious school meals over the summer months when school is out of session. So, Feeding San Diego is hosting 26 distribution sites this summer to help make sure that children under age 18 are getting the nutrition that they need to grow and thrive. You don't have to fill out any forms to get food for children at Feeding San Diego's special summer food distribution sites. For a list of days and times, visit FeedingSanDiego.org. The locations for the summer feeding sites include libraries in Borrego Springs, Hakumba, Julian, Potrero, Ramona, and Valley Center. Other locations in our inland region include the Mesa Grande Indian Housing Authority in Santa Isabel, Julian Elementary School, Palomar YMCA in Escondido, Community Housing Works at Maplewood Apartments in Lakeside, and Hope Through Housing at Shadow Hills Apartments in Santee. There are also feeding sites for children in San Diego at Price Philanthropies, Ocean Discovery Institute, Star Pal, La Maestra, and Pro Kids, as well as several schools in San Diego Unified School District. For more information on how to find summer meals for your children, you can call 211 San Diego or text FOOD to 877-877 or visit feedingsandiego.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
The Ramona Heart Mural Project has added two new murals to the community in June. La Quinceañera by artist Jonathan Martinez was recently installed at Leslie's Pool Supplies on Main Street. The vibrantly colored mural depicts the celebration of a Catholic girl's 15th birthday in the Latino tradition. The second new mural is Classic Bikes on the Cheers of Ramona building, also on Main Street. The mural illustrates classic motorcycles that frequent the Ramona location. Artist Beata Wojcik's design is the 22nd mural in the Ramona Heart Mural series. Ramona Heart Mural Project is a nonprofit that aims to encourage visitors to stop and enjoy Ramona's beauty, charm, character, and heritage. Heart is an acronym reflecting Ramona's qualities depicted in the murals. H stands for historic and hiking, E for equine, A for arts, antiques, and agriculture, R for scenic rural vistas and drives, and T for tasting of fine wines. In addition to the full-size murals on buildings, each with heart symbols hidden in the paintings, the Ramona Heart Murals Project also supports artists painting utility boxes to beautify the community. You can learn more about where to see Ramona's many murals or donate to support these creative efforts at ramonamurals.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is Jonathan Getz on KNSJ 89.1 FM with the public service announcement from the City of La Mesa. Do you want to help plan the activities for the youth in La Mesa? Applications are being accepted for several openings on the City's Youth Advisory Commission. Applicants must live within the city limits of La Mesa and be at least 13 years old, but not more than 20 years old, at the time of appointment. Participating on the commission is a great way for young people in middle and high school to work with their peers to explore and develop activities that promote positive youth relations in the city, and gain volunteer experience that can be applied towards community service hours. Being a commission member also looks great on college and job applications. Commission meetings are held on the second and fourth Monday of each month at 4:30 p.m. in the Community Center on Memorial Drive in La Mesa. Applications must be returned to the City Clerk's office no later than 5:30 p.m. on Friday, September 13, 2019, to be considered for the September 24th interview process. Applications may be obtained from the city's website, cityoflamesa.us, or at La Mesa City Hall on Allison Avenue during normal business hours. You may also call the office of the city clerk at 619-667-1120 for more information, or again, visit the city's website at cityoflamesa.us.
Starting July 1st, California's tax on gasoline will rise to over 60 cents a gallon, up from just over 55 cents, making it the highest gas tax in the nation. Across the U.S., state gasoline taxes range from a low of just under 15 cents in Alaska, that's an oil and gas producing state, to a high of nearly 59 cents in Pennsylvania, a rate that California will now surpass. The increase was signed into law by former Governor Jerry Brown. It drew strong opposition, including a ballot measure, Proposition 6, which sought to repeal the increase but failed to win approval of voters. Supporters say the increase is needed to repair deteriorating or damaged infrastructure, such as state highways and bridges. Opponents contended the hike would be unduly burdensome on consumers, particularly those with lower fixed incomes. Now, the gas tax is expected to generate $54 billion in revenues over the next 10 years. So just where does the money that you pay for gas taxes go? Last year, about 59% of the gas tax revenues were used to fund repairs and maintenance to our public highways, roads, and bridges, as well as public transit. Another 22% funded the California Highway Patrol and the Department of Motor Vehicles. About 7.5% was used to pay off transportation-related debt, and another 7.5% went to local law enforcement agencies, the state's general fund, and other departments, with about 3% covering administrative costs. A small sliver was spent to reduce impacts of vehicle emissions, fund bicycle and pedestrian amenities, and fund research related to transportation, according to the California Department of Finance. With gasoline soon to cost an extra nickel a gallon, you may want to fill up your tank before that gas tax increase takes effect on July 1st. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Gerald Stevenson with East County Magazine's Green Scene Report. The Center for Biological Diversity and the Mountain Lion Foundation this week sent a petition asking the California Fish and Game Commission to protect mountain lions under the California Endangered Species Act. The petition seeks endangered species protections for gravely imperiled populations of mountain lions, also known as cougars or pumas, in Southern California and on the Central Coast, including all of San Diego County. Some Southern California lion populations could disappear in little more than a decade, according to a March 2019 study by researchers at UC Davis, UCLA, and the National Park Service. Lynn Cullins, executive director with the Mountain Lion Foundation, says that her organization has been working with San Diego authorities for several years due to concerns over a high rate of mountain lions killed after depredation permits were issued because the lions preyed on livestock in rural areas of East County and North County. Between 63 and 126 adult mountain lions are all that are estimated to remain in the entire Eastern Peninsular Range, which includes mountains in San Diego and Imperial counties, as well as parts of Riverside and San Bernardino counties. In San Diego last year, 16 depredation permits were issued, the most ever, and 5 lions were killed with those permits. More mountain lion deaths occurred from other causes locally. Tiffany Yap, a biologist at the Center for Biological Diversity, says, "Our mountain lions are dying horrible deaths from car collisions and rat poisons, and their populations are at risk from inbreeding too." She predicts without a clear legal mandate to protect mountain lions from the threats that are killing them and hemming them in on all sides, these iconic wildcats will soon be gone from Southern California. Habitat loss and fragmentation caused by freeways and sprawl have led to high levels of genetic isolation and deaths. These lion populations suffer from dangerously low genetic diversity. The animals are often killed trying to cross freeways, shot for preying on livestock, and killed by poachers. Others die after consuming prey that have ingested toxic rodenticides. Whenever a female lion dies, there's a good chance kittens are being orphaned. Mountain lions have profound impacts on their environment, which help support the overall health of California ecosystems, biologists say. Lion kills provide important food sources for other wild animals, including endangered California condors and gray foxes. Losing mountain lions may create imbalances that can also impact people. In the eastern United States, where cougars are now extinct, uncontrolled growth of deer populations has caused overgrazed vegetation and an increase in illnesses caused by ticks carried by deer, such as Lyme disease. Under the California Endangered Species Act, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife has 3 months to make an initial recommendation to the Fish and Game Commission, which will then vote on the petition at a public hearing later this year. If mountain lions win endangered species protection, state and local agencies will have to work more carefully to manage threats to the lions. For example, road and development projects would have to include measures to preserve natural habitat links, such as creating wildlife crossings under freeways. Cullen concludes, "It's time to recognize the threats that face mountain lions and improve our ability to protect them, because they matter for their own sakes and have significant value to all Californians."
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
July brings Independence Day celebrations, including 4th of July parades in Julian and Alpine, the Lake Murray Fireworks and Music Festival, as well as Independence Day celebrations in Santee, El Cajon, and Poway.
Plus, we'll have even more July events, including the Sunshine Boys at Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa, the Descanso Days Parade and Fair, Watermelon Days at Oasis Camel Dairy, Pine Valley Days, and a Sip of Julian.
We'll also have some all-summer-long events, including outdoor concerts, movies in parks across our region, classic car shows, and dive-in movies at the Croc Center's swimming pool.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Julian's annual 4th of July parade celebrates the town's Gold Rush history, the dedication of veterans and active duty military members and local residents who cherish the small-town lifestyle in the mountains of San Diego's East County. The parade rolls out at 10 a.m. down the town's main street, with activities continuing until 5 p.m. Parade entries include the Gold Drum and Bugle Corps, mariachis, bagpipes, vintage tractors and antique cars, belly dancers, Mr. and Mrs. Apple Days, Supervisor Diane Jacob, and more.
The City of El Cajon invites you to celebrate Independence Day with numerous games, live musical entertainment, and fireworks. On Thursday, July 4th, the El Cajon Recreation Department will host the annual picnic and celebration for the city from 1 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. at Kennedy Park in El Cajon.
The Lake Murray Fireworks and Music Fest will also be held on July 4th from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. This event features food, fun, bands, and fireworks. Fireworks will be launched from a barge on the lake for viewing throughout the community. The Music Fest will be held on the San Carlos side of the lake, but the La Mesa side will also be open throughout the day and evening for fireworks viewing. For more information, you can visit lakemurrayfireworks.org.
Santee Salutes is the City of Santee's July 4th celebration, held at Town Center Community Park East from 2:30 to 10:30 p.m. The festivities include live music by the 90s All-Stars, a kids' fun zone, a food area, a patriotic ceremony at 6 p.m., and a spectacular fireworks display at 9. A shuttle service runs from 3:30 to 11 p.m. from the Costco parking lot on Cuyamaca.
Alpine will roll out an old-fashioned 4th of July parade and a carnival from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The parade includes entries ranging from antique cars to costumed children along Alpine Boulevard, ending at the Alpine Community Center Park, home of the Alpine Veterans Wall of Honor. There you can enjoy live music, a deep pit barbecue, and a carnival with plenty of activities for children and families.
Old Poway Park will host an old-fashioned 4th of July celebration, 20th century style, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on July 4th. The historic park will have patriotic entertainment, Western reenactors, model train displays, crafts, old-fashioned games, and, for a fee, rides on a historic railway. Shuttles are available from Poway City Hall's parking lot and Poway Adult School. After the daytime activities at the park, you can drive over to Poway High School to watch fireworks at 9 p.m.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa will present Neil Simon's The Sunshine Boys from July 5th through August 5th on Friday and Saturday nights, plus Sunday afternoon matinees. A young theatrical agent attempts to reunite his elderly uncle, a former vaudeville great, with his longtime stage partner for a TV reunion. For tickets, you can visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
The annual Descanso Days Parade and Fair will take place on July 6th. The parade rolls out at 9 a.m. along Viejas Grade Road. The fair will be held at the historic Descanso Town Hall from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. This year's theme is A Blast from the Past with live music by the Get Groovin' Dance Band.
It's time again for Watermelon Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona, July 13th and 14th from 11:30 to 6 p.m. You can feed watermelons to camels, play games such as watermelon splash and toss, watch an exotic bird and animal show, feed miniature sheep in Sheeptown, and even ride a camel. You can find more information at cameldairy.com.
The Mountain Empire Men's Club will present Pine Valley Days July 26th and 27th. The two-day festival starts with a deep pit barbecue from 5 to 9 p.m. on Friday night, and live music by Barb Wire from 6 to 10. On Saturday, there's breakfast at the clubhouse at 7 a.m., followed by the Pine Valley Days Parade at 9 a.m. along Old Highway 80 from the Pine Valley Library to the middle school. Next up, there's a full day of activities in Pine Valley Park, including children's activities, arts and crafts, vendors, live music, food, and a horseshoe tournament. You can check the pinevalleydays.com site to find more information.
A Sip of Julian on July 27th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. will feature 10 tasting rooms offering samples of beer, wine, hard cider, and craft cocktails with small food pairings. Tickets are available at the Julian Town Hall. Proceeds will be used to fund the annual Julian Country Christmas and Tree Lighting Ceremony.
Now for some all-summer-long events. Grab your popcorn. It's time for summertime movies at the outdoor roller skating rink at Viejas Outlets Shopping Mall in Alpine. Showtime start at 7:30 p.m. every Friday night from now through early July. The lineup of popular movies coming up in July includes Star Wars, The Force Awakens, How to Train a Dragon 3, The Lego Movie, Jungle Book, and Inside Out. A full schedule of events is available at Viejas.com in the Entertainment section.
The Salvation Army Joan Crock Community Center, just one block west of La Mesa on University Avenue, invites you to a series of dive-in movies that you can watch in the swimming pool. All shows start at 7 p.m. On July 17th, you can watch Hotel Transylvania 3 Summer Vacation, followed by How to Train Your Dragon The Hidden World on August 7th.
El Cajon's popular movies in the park run all summer long at parks across the city. The July lineup includes Aquaman at the Fletcher Hills Pool on July 6th, Incredibles 2 at Bill Beck Park on July 12th, Big Hero 6 at Bostonia Park on July 19th, as well as Ant-Man and the Wasp at Kennedy Park on July 26th. Guests can enjoy additional fun activities before the start of the movie at nightfall. For a list of the shows, you can visit elcajonrec.org.
Lemon Grove Summer Concert Series opens June 27th and continues through August 22nd, each Thursday evening from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Berry Street Park. The July and August concerts coming up will include salsa, Cajun Zydeco, rock and roll, Motown, country music, and more. Check the City of Lemon Grove's website calendar for a full schedule of upcoming movies.
El Cajon's popular dinner and a concert series is held each Friday evening at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon from 6 to 8 p.m. Shows will continue all summer long. You can bring a picnic dinner or dine early at one of the restaurants nearby before rocking out at the outdoor concert. A schedule of upcoming performers is available at downtownelcajon.com.
Santee's Summer Concert Series is being held from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East on Thursday nights all summer long through August 22nd. July show include the Bill McGee Blues Band, Three Chord Justice, and Bump City Brass. The City of Santee has the full lineup of artists on its website at cityofsantee.ca.gov and click on the calendar.
The City of La Mesa's Sundays at 6 concert series continues at Harry Griffin Park in the Outdoor Amphitheater each Sunday evening at 6 p.m. through July 28th. July performers are Wild Nights, Ginger Cowgirl, 8-Track Highway, and Sonic Epidemic. Find more information on the city's website at cityoflamesa.com under Special Events.
The La Mesa Village Association rolls out its La Mesa Classic Car Show each Thursday from 5 to 8 p.m., from now running through August 29th, although there will be no show over the 4th of July weekend. This event features pre-1974 cars, trucks, and vans. The event will feature DJs and live bands located at 3rd and La Mesa Boulevard, and an award giveaway at each event honoring the night's best cars. You can find full details at lamesavillageassociation.org.
El Cajon's Classic Cruise Nights is celebrating its centennial season. You can view classic cars every Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m. along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. July's car show themes include American Muscle, Off-Road Madness, Groovy Bands, VW Mania, and Thrill Seekers. For a full schedule of events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
Summer is in full swing at San Diego County Library. County residents of all ages are encouraged to sign up for the Summer Challenge, which allows participants to earn prizes for completing activities. Qualifying activities include reading, attending a library program, and using one of the library's databases. You can sign up at any San Diego County Library branch, bookmobile, or online at sdcl.org. The theme of this year's Summer Challenge is Read, Learn, Create. All 33 county library branches are hosting fun activities through August 31st to celebrate. Jody De La Pena, San Diego County Library's Youth Services Manager, says, "Even though the program is open to county residents of all ages, the primary goal of the Summer Challenge is to encourage kids and teens to read during their long break from school. Research shows that reading during the summer prevents what's called the summer slide, the tendency for students to lose some of the achievements they gained during the school year," she adds. You don't have to set foot inside a brick-and-mortar branch to join in the library's Summer Challenge fun. If you don't have a library card, you can sign up for an instant digital card allowing you access to the library's collection of 125,000 e-books and audiobooks from the comfort of your home. All you need is a cell phone number with a billing zip code in San Diego County. To sweeten the deal, the library is offering select e-book titles without wait times this summer. Three different bestsellers will be available each week, one for children, one for teens, and one for adults. You learn more about the Summer Challenge at the San Diego County Library's website at sdcl.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
A generation ago, San Diego was considered a bastion of conservatism and East County was solid red Republican territory. But that's changing. First, the city of San Diego turned blue, and it now has nearly twice as many Democrats as Republicans. Then, the county flipped. Today, nearly 36% of all county residents are Democrats, and 27% are Republicans, with 32% registered as no-party preference voters. East County is also experiencing changing registration patterns. Two of East County's four incorporated cities now have more Democrats than Republicans. One is evenly split, and a fourth is still staunchly Republican. Supervisorial District 2, where a heated race to replace retiring Supervisor Diane Jacob will take place in 2020, currently has over 367,000 registered voters. Republicans still outnumber Democrats at around 129,000 to 113,000, with another 104,000 voters with no party preference. That's not the hefty lead the GOP once enjoyed. Among East County cities, Lemon Grove has nearly twice as many Democrats as Republicans. La Mesa, which shifted into the blue category in the last presidential election cycle, now has a solid Democratic majority with over 13,600 Democrats and 8,400 Republicans. El Cajon is split virtually 50-50 between the two major parties. Santee, however, remains a Republican stalwart with over 33,000 Republicans and only about 8,700 Democrats. Across all local jurisdictions, there are many no-party preference voters, in some cases outnumbering the number of registered voters in one or both major parties. Changing political views may also impact local races such as school boards, water boards, fire boards, and community planning groups, as well as city council races that, while ostensibly nonpartisan, have recently seen political parties endorsing candidates. At the local level, however, voters still tend to vote for the person they may know and respect, rather than cast ballots based on blind party loyalty. Elected officials who have displayed arrogance towards the public or ignored the will of the voters have tended to be trounced at the polls, regardless of party affiliation, while some popular incumbents have won by large margins with help from cross-party votes. Party becomes more important in higher offices, where major political parties invest heavily to maintain or gain power in the halls of Congress and the state legislature. The 50th Congressional District, where indicted Congressman Duncan Hunter goes on trial for federal corruption charges in September, is another closely watched race. Whether Democrat Amar Campa-Najjar winds up facing off against Hunter or other Republican challengers, the registration advantage is still strongly tilted towards the GOP. Of some 344,000 voters in the district, 92,000 are Democrats and 135,000 are Republicans, with 96,000 no party preference voters, major wild cards since it is unclear which way they lean. There are also a few third party voters ranging from Libertarians to Greens. What's pushing San Diego County, like most of California, out of the Republican Party and into the Democratic and no-party preference columns? Reasons for the shift toward Democratic values may include dissatisfaction with the national leadership and partisan political divide, as well as changing demographics and concerns about issues such as healthcare, income disparity, climate change, jobs, college costs, equality, women's rights, and treatment of minorities. Those areas that remain strong conservative bastions locally are home to many voters motivated by concerns over immigration and border security, taxes, small business regulations in the economy, rural and agricultural issues, gun rights, and conservative evangelical beliefs on issues such as abortion. You can view the complete registration breakdown by party for all local districts at the report on registration at the California Secretary of State's website. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
Civil rights groups are praising a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that will probably keep a question about citizenship off the 2020 census. The High Court rejected the Trump administration's explanation that asking people about their citizenship status is necessary to enforce the Voting Rights Act. Thomas Sines, president of the Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund, says recently unearthed documents from a now-deceased Republican consultant proved the real motivation behind the question.
That consultant indicates the reason to include the citizenship question is to advantage white, non-Hispanic, and Republicans. Ultimately, what's behind adding the question is to trigger an undercount in groups that the Trump administration views as hostile.
Immigrants' rights groups claim that a citizenship question would prompt foreign-born Americans to ignore the survey, fearing that the Census Bureau would turn their data over to immigration enforcement officers who could use it to target undocumented relatives for deportation. Any undercount would negatively affect immigrant communities because census data is used to redraw political maps and distribute federal funds. Signs notes that any such breach of confidentiality would be highly illegal and vows close scrutiny of the process.
Powerful people and powerful organizations will be carefully watching and will step in to the extent they can to stop any breach of confidentiality. That's how important this is.
This decision leaves the door open for the administration to come back with a different argument, and the president is now calling for the census to be delayed. Civil rights groups are pressing on with a similar lawsuit intended to prove that racial intent was the motive for adding the citizenship question and asking that it be blocked permanently from census forms. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. A new report ranks California 35th in the nation for overall child well-being, a slight improvement over last year. The 2019 Kids Count data book from the Annie E. Casey Foundation showed that the state has made great strides in health, but still lags in economic well-being. Kelly Hardy with the nonprofit Children Now says 18% of California's children, about 1.6 million kids, live in poverty, and 46% have a high housing burden.
That's partly due to the high cost of housing in California, that many families with children are spending a lot of their income on housing and are living below the poverty line.
The state has made huge progress in getting kids insured. 97% of children in the state are covered. Several years ago, California opened up Medi-Cal to undocumented children, and the new budget is expected to extend eligibility to 19 to 25-year-olds, which should improve measures of maternal health. On education, the state has made gains in fourth grade reading and eighth grade math proficiency, but still ranks 36th overall. The state shows that California's 9 million children are very diverse. 52% are Latino, 28% white, 13% Asian or Pacific Islander, and 6% are black. Leslie Bossier with the Casey Foundation says strategic investments in things such as high-quality preschool and affordable child care would boost the prospects for many children from low-income neighborhoods of color.
When we look at policies that really focus on the basic needs of families and ensuring that everyone has access to opportunity, then we can see a reduction in the disparities and the inequities that we see for kids of color.
The report also warns that any undercount in the 2020 census would hit California hard. The report estimates that as many as 750,000 California kids could be missed, costing the state billions of dollars for federal programs such as the Children's Health Insurance Program, SNAP, and Head Start. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A new farmer's market is sprouting in Campo. The Golden Acorn Casino announces launch of its open-air market that will be held the first and last Saturdays of every month from 3:30 to 7 p.m. starting June 29th. The market will feature fresh produce, eggs from pasture-raised hens, dried and canned goods, and more, all grown locally at Rose Acres Farm near the Tecate Divide. Rose Acres also offers monthly boxes of fresh local foods under a community-supported agriculture program, as well as tours, classes, and more. You can learn more at roseacresfarm.com.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show, and now it's time for the Sounds of History.
They call them the greatest generation. World War II veteran pilots reminisced about their combat flight experiences aboard a B-17 Warbird, aptly named Sentimental Journey. This peacetime flight out of El Cajon's Gillespie Field was offered by the Arizona Memorial Museum's staff and flight crew to local members of the press and public, and our reporter, Rebecca Jeffress Williamson, was on board. 95-year-old Bill Milton recalls, "I was on my 11th mission when I got shot down on a strafing run in Greece. I was coming in low to see if I could hit as many airplanes and buildings as possible, trying to hinder their ability to operate off their airfield." Milton was captured and became a prisoner of war, or POW. He was transferred from Greece to Stalagluft III in Germany, where he was imprisoned for 7 months. "Food was scarce," he recalls. "You were living in conditions where you were guarded all the time," continued Milton. Then General Patton reached the area with Allied troops, and Milton was rescued in April 1945. Fellow World War II pilot Ed Davidson, now 95, was a pilot on a B-17 when he was 19 years old. He recalls, "Everything happened in a couple of seconds. We were flying very low to the ground. Then ground fire took out my left engine. He too became a POW when he was shot down over occupied France on his seventh mission in January 1944. The next day we went through Paris, and then to Frankfurt, then to Barth, says Davison, who spent 16 months in Stalag Luft I. I spent my 21st birthday there, he recalls. In April, we started hearing the guns, so by May 1st, 1945, the Russians liberated us. They put 30 POWs on each B-17 and flew them to Allied military camps. We were at Camp Lucky Strike, he says, adding that each of the camps were named for cigarette brands. Debbie English is the adjutant and membership officer for Air Group 1, based out of Gillespie Field. She and her husband Doug were both on hand to greet the crew of the Sentimental Journey. She says they worked for 6 months to get the Arizona Commemorative Air Force Museum crew here, along with the Sentimental Journey B-17. Air Group 1 was formed as the San Diego Squadron of CAF in 1981. They were renamed Air Group 1 2 years later. They have a hangar and a World War II museum, with a mission to keep history alive by restoring World War II aircraft, providing memorial flyovers at events, and a presence at local air shows. The organization brought the Sentimental Journey to the airport and offered rides for a fee in the rare B-17G Warbird, one of only 8 of this model left in the entire world. During the 25-minute air tour over East County, the roar of the engine, images of the propeller and the sky beyond induced an adrenaline rush and a sense of what it must have been like riding in this aircraft during wartime. But on this flight, passengers didn't have to fear being shot down by enemy aircraft or taken prisoner. As the Sentimental Journey landed, veteran Bill Milton called it a beautiful flight. If you would like to take a ride aboard the Sentimental Journey, the vintage airplane will be in Palm Springs until October 14th. And in Bakersfield until October 21st. For more information or to purchase a ride, you can visit flyinglegendstour.com. To find out about future flight opportunities or to support Air Group 1, you can visit the Air Group 1 website at ag1caf.org. Reporting for East County Magazine's Sounds of History series, this is John Fisteer.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.